and as we always do, acknowledging the country that we meet on today, Ngalakaritch, Wunjingalak Nining, Ngalakaritch, Nijibujibal Wajak Nyungabujimalak Nining, always was, always will be. Councillors in attendance, we have a few apologies. Councillor Congerton is an apology and is being deputised by Councillor Ian Johnson. Councillor Lorna Clark is also an apology, and as I understand it, Councillor Pifferetti was not available to deputise. And of course, Deputy Chairman Councillor Jeans is an apology and Amy Collins is deputising. Leave of absence previously approved, nil. We have, of course, our diligent MRC staff in attendance with us this evening, and in the visitor gallery we have James McGovern from Walga, who is, I'm sure you've all met in the past, who is observing this evening's proceedings. We've got Doug Pearson, who's the Director of Major Projects from the City of Bayswater, and we also have Mr. Nick Reynolds, who's the Executive Advisor for GHD with us. He'll be doing a presentation later on in the meeting. Item three, disclosures of interest. I've not received any disclosures of interest thus far. Any of the councillors who are deputising, have you had a chance to look at the agenda and satisfy yourself? Yes, okay. Item four, announcements by the chairman without discussion. Since our last meeting, we have reconvened the Reconciliation Action Plan Working Group. And at that meeting, Councillor Doyle was reappointed as the chair for that committee. A report will come from staff in due course, but we had some discussion about projects that we might be able to do as a council in furtherance of our Reconciliation Action Plan. There was some discussion about artwork that might be able to be put on some of the walls of our high traffic areas, and some other projects which will be reported back to council in due course. Item five, response to previous questions taken on notice. There's none that I'm aware of, no. Item six, public question time. The chambers are still closed for public questions. Did we receive any? No. Item seven, applications for leave of absence. Does anyone wish to apply for a leave of absence at this stage? No. Item eight, petitions, deputations and presentations. So we've got two presentations this evening. The first relates to the MRC strategic review, which Nick Reynolds from GHD will be doing. And the second is a report in relation to waste that the chairman will be leading, I believe. CEO, sorry, will be leading. Mr. CEO, did you want to introduce Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. So we had a fantastic meeting today with the GHD, and I thought it was prudent to actually give a bit of feedback on the progress regarding the strategic review. We've adjusted the methodology and the focus a little bit. So myself and all the chiefs in the EMRC have been interviewed to date. The project was kicked off successfully. The next step is actually interviewing all the CEOs and the deputy, the mayors and the deputy mayors and the CEOs of all the member councils. So I think they're in the process of being organized, the meetings. And then the next step is actually we wanted to look at some visions to set some parameters on the modeling and scenario options that we want to look at as an organization. So Nick Reynolds is here tonight to take us through the revised approach. It's not a major change, just a little bit. It's still within the scope. There's no change of scope at all. But I think it's just prudent to just share with you on the focus and the timing what we want to push through. The idea is that we will have this review done by the end of February next year, so we'll shorten it by 2 months. And the reason for that is we don't want to rush, but we think we can do it. But then we can start looking at budgeting as well, and actually taking into account the budget implications of any outcomes of the strategic review.
Thank you, Mr. CEO. And just while Nick is getting himself sorted out with his newfangled microphone set up, just point out to councillors in your red packs in front of you, there's a copy of the PowerPoint presentation on methodology for you to read.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Oh, I can hear myself. And it's one of those really good, hopefully, good PowerPoint presentations with one slide. But I only have 8 minutes or 10 minutes, so and it's a fair bit on the slide, so I apologise for that. But let me run through what we're doing. As Marcus had said earlier, the actual steps haven't changed, but some of the things we're doing has changed a little bit from what we initially proposed. But that was based on our initial conversations. I think it's been really interesting, so thanks very much to the executive and Marcus for all their time. And we've done this for stage one. And I want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do and some key touch points, certainly for the councils that make up the MRC. So that's really important. You are the stakeholders, you do, and I think that's really important that you're involved in the process, because it's your council. What we're doing right now, so is literally starting this week, we're going to do a summary. So we've done this bit, we're doing a current assessment. So what's the current situation for each, the context for which you're going to create a new strategy or a strategic review? And what's clear is it's a really good time to do it. You're on an inflection point. The existing business that's run for the last 10, 15 years is going to change. And it's driven by the waste of energy project and all of a sudden the changes to volumes going into Red Hill. So the existing business can't carry on as it's doing it right now. So it's an important time to go and have another look at what you're doing and why you're doing it. The first step, and across the top you'll see there are six stages. First thing is you want to understand where we are. You want to look at... And this is the approach you're taking. If you're going to create a strategy, you kind of need to know, set some guidelines as to what you want to create a strategy from. It needs to have some top-down to it. So the idea is, to do that, you need to understand where you are. So this is going to understand where you are, and I'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a minute. Then, given the where you are, where do you want to go? And that's that vision and objectives part. Given where you want to go, you can then create a strategy around what your service offer is. So what do you offer the market? And you offer your, in your case, you offer your residents, but also commercially, you have a business which can also take residential waste, but it also can take commercial waste. Then the next question is, so what services? And then the next question is, how are you actually going to deliver it? That's that business model. So what is the approach you're going to take to actually deliver the services you want to put in the marketplace? So what do you want to go do? How are you going to go do it? Now, what we anticipate is there's going to be a range of different options you can pursue. And a lot of what we've heard so far is that there's quite a variation in perspectives on the MRC within the stakeholder group. And we anticipate that we're going to have different options. They're going to say, look, potentially there are two or three different visions for the organisation. What we can do in this stage is we can go and say, well, what does that mean? So you have a narrow-based MRC or a broader-based MRC. What does that mean for your service offering? What does it mean for your operating model? We can then model those, being both the financial but also the qualitative criteria about how well does it fit, how does the model or this different vision, the strategy, how does it match up, how does it compare with what our overall decision-making criteria are, and not always financial. And from that, once we've looked at all the pros and cons, we'll do a multi-criteria analysis piece here. we'll write a report, and there'll be a draft report that'll be presented to yourselves, and then we'll need to go and popularise that. We'll need to go and talk to all your constituents about that draft report. The key here is that the draft report, if we can get this done by end of February, beginning of March, that means Marcus and the team here can incorporate at least the thinking behind that, even if it's not signed off, into his budget for next year. So we are aiming to try to accelerate the current scope to enable that to happen. The key bits, as far as input is concerned, is really around, we need to go and talk to you guys to understand your perspective, and that is, that's the mayors, then deputy mayors and CEOs for each of the respective councils, and that's what the stakeholder engagement piece is here. And we're going to do that over the next, hopefully, the next couple of weeks. We've reached out to, I think, every council so far. We've got, we've got Belmont nailed down. I don't know about everybody else, but they certainly expect your councils to have been approached on that. And I think that's really important that we get that feedback. And so it'll just be GHC folks in the room. And the lady who's actually doing that is an ex-councillor for Joondalup, so she understands councils. And while at the same time, we'll be working on a piece on circular economy. So what does circular economy mean in the EMRC context? And I'm the head of our environmental team in WA, a guy called Nick Holdsworth, he will be doing that piece of work. While that's going on, we're going to summarise the current market. And the current market is changing, so it's not just current, it's going to be a future market. And then we're also going to look at what the current assets EMRC have and the current planned assets for EMRC. So that creates our current assessment. And we're going to actually go and present that finding. Our aim is to do that towards the end of November. And I think so look out for a calendar invite at the end of November for us to present those initial assessment, the current assessment to you at that time. And the importance of that current assessment is because that's a feed into I think a really important aspect, a really, really important aspect of where we want all the stakeholders' involvement is in that vision setting. Because if we think about, if you're going to set a strategy, you need to understand where you want to go to. And as an outsider coming into EMRC, you want to clear, what's clear is that there are potentially different opinions around what EMRC should or shouldn't be doing. And I think it's really important that we intend to hold a workshop, and it'll probably be at least half a day workshop, with the key stakeholders, I don't know who, but in December, early December on that point. So if that's what our plan is, I don't know if Marcus, you want to allow questions at this time? So any questions for me at the moment? So, thanks very much for your time this evening. Short notice. But we'll be out in touch with you shortly. And as I said, the key points from our perspective of interaction is the stakeholder engagement, the presentation of the current assessment, and that visioning workshop in the beginning of December. And so those dates, look out for those dates, either for yourselves or people in the council. Any question?
Councillor Hamilton, do you have a question?
Yes. You say you don't know who the stakeholders are, but I would assume that it's not just councillors, it'd be deputy councillors. You mentioned CEOs, deputy mayors, and mayors. And also, would that be technical officers from the councils as well?
When I say I didn't know who the stakeholders were, I have a pretty good idea. I'm not sure the individuals... Who exactly we're going to invite you. We haven't got that invitation list out and ready yet to send out, but we will be doing that shortly. So that's a good question, whether the technical officer should be part of that conversation or not. We haven't made any decision on that at all.
Okay. It's just they have input many of the decision-making, so maybe that review has to incorporate all aspects of the business.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Thank you for that, and we'll take that into consideration. Exactly.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson, did you indicate a question?
I did, but more for the organisation than for GHD, so I don't know when the right time for that is.
Maybe we'll save it for the questions without notice section of the agenda.
Thank you.
No problem. Well, if there's nothing else, then I'll head out. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds, for coming and sharing where you're up to with us. We appreciate the overview, and I'm sure we'll be engaging with you in greater detail in the not-too-distant future. That brings us to item 8.2, which is the waste report presentation that will be led by the CEO.
Thank you, Chairman. And this actually follows on from Councillor Georgia Johnson. She asked a question at the last council meeting whether we can make the presentation of figures a bit more user-friendly. And the team at EMRC actually has been working on this for the last 6 months, and we are actually ready to present it and include it into, for example, in the information bulletin. In the information bulletin, we've got lines and schedules and tables, and there's no end, and it's very difficult to read them, and so we would like to present it a little bit in a different format, so it's more user-friendly, and you can see at a glance through a dashboard whether the EMRC is on track with tonnages financially and with capital works. So I'll just go through a couple of slides. So we're actually using the Microsoft Power BI. We're using the free version. We just had a bit of training done with one of our employees, and it's fantastic, actually, once you put the Excel information, suck it out of the existing system and put it into Power BI, what reports we can generate. So on the top, there's a drop-down box. There's a PowerPoint, so I can't drop it down, but we can do it on year, and we can look at councils, member councils. So, for example, this is the tonnage received at the EMRC per quarter. So it's fairly steady. And this is the recycling we've done from these tonnages received. So 3,400 tons. And total for the quarter, 31,000 tons, so about 10% was recycled at the time. Another report we can generate is the member council report for the year. Financially, this is per month, so not per quarter. So this is the budget, the red line, and then we look at last year's, is the light blue, and the dark blue is this year. So the council members' waste is up, because the blue line is over budget, and it's up on last year. So we're trying to get all these analytics in so we can actually look at the trending in the business, because based on trending in the business, we can make sound business decisions. Another report we generate is, these are the member councils, Swan, Bayswater, Kalamunda, Belmont, Mundaring, and Bassendean, so six member councils. Here are the numbers. Swan, this is the waste, the residual, or the waste delivered to Red Hill, and there's a little bit of recycling happening. It must come from Bullsbrook, sorry. Bayswater is very clear here. This is the gold bin in Bayswater, so this is the total waste. It's 28,000 tons, and 10,000 tons of that is the gold bin. Some green waste here from Kalamunda, but the majority goes obviously in the landfill, and here it goes down. So total waste received, this is for 2020, so we can also generate this obviously for 2021 year to date, or for 2019. This is the tonnage received from the member councils for this year, 2020, 141,000 tons. And of that 141,000 tons, 10% was recovered, and 90% went into the Red Hill landfill. Another graph we can generate is the tonnage for this year, so per quarter. You see for the first quarter we're over for member council tonnage, but as I said before, we can generate that for previous years and also for individual councils. Now, we can even dive in a bit deeper and analyze the numbers. So this is the tonnage from all the member council waste, but split in the category. So this is the domestic waste from the MGB. There's a bulk verge collection, the MGB green waste, a Copper Road transfer station, Netherton transfer station. So we can actually slice and dice in whichever way we want and have that information available. And I have to point out, this is only the waste that the EMRC receiver of the member councils. And not all waste of member councils comes to the EMRC. So this is not all the information you will get if you go to your own technical officer. They will obviously have all the information. For example, recycling is not in here, the yellow lid bin, because we don't receive that. But we can work towards it, maybe, and work together to generate meaningful graphs.
Just a question, if I may. Are you working with live data there, or are these...
No, this is just a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
I thought it was too complicated. Now what we're going to do is from here, we're going to generate a dashboard, and then we can, whatever report is required, we can actually then generate.
I just thought if it was live, we would have had the opportunity to answer Council Wolf's question on notice, but that's all right.
Fantastic.
We'll deal with that separately.
Yeah. Now, I got a question about 12 months ago about commercial waste. You know, how do we track that? And this is actually the commercial customers. Other commercial, this is class 3 material. This is majority of that is the PFAS material. Waste timber, transfer station waste, class 4 material. So there's another. And here we combine the commercial and the member council waste. So the member council waste at 141,000 or 113,000 tons is this one. Also, bulk verge. So all the blues adds up to 141,000 tons, but also the commercial volumes are in this graph and where it's generated. Now, if you combine the numbers commercial waste versus member council waste, this is again SWAM, Bayswater, Kalamanda, Belmont, Mundaring, Bassendean, and this is all a commercial waste at 110,000 tons per annum. Total tons received last year, 251,000 tons. What we're also starting to do is actually overlay the budget. And this is, again, for 2020, for last year. And you see largely SWAM was on budget, Kalamanda on budget, Bayswater, something must have happened because it's over budget, about 10-15%. Mundaring waste was under budget. So now we can actually start with budgeting for next year. We can start with these numbers and put some sensitivities in. For the commercial waste, it's the same. So we got more commercial waste in. Than budgeted, and this one is interesting. This is actually the PFAS waste that came in early last year. So we budgeted for 5,000 tons, and we actually got in 28,000 tons. So this is fantastic resource. Here again, overlay the council waste and the commercial waste, and the budget lines. Now mattresses, we decided to go to mattress recycling. So in 2020, these are the mattresses. There was the budgeted mattresses, and these were the actual mattresses. This was from SWAM, so way more mattresses than we anticipated, and the rest is clear. Also what we started to do is, because what is meaningful information for you as a councillor is then the waste generated per head of population, because that's a number that's easy to, per capita. That's a number that's easy to track and to communicate with the residents. This is per quarter, so if you add up these four quarters, you get to about 440 kilos per capita. And here's the breakdown for the member councils. This is the councils, again, per quarter, and the colors are the councils. So light blue, Bassendean, dark blue, Bayswater, Belmont, orange, Kalamanda, purple, Mundaring, pink, and purple, blue for SWAM. This is the per household. So we have per capita, and now we also slice and dice it per household. And here you see the waste generation per household per quarter. So these are interesting numbers for councillors to have handy for discussions with residents. Again, per household, but then per council. The last set of slides is about the waste generated and delivered to the EMRC organization per council. So this is this is the Bassendean tonnages. Obviously, we did a verge collection in June and May. This is Bayswater. Here we've got Belmont and Kalamanda Mundaring. So you can actually look at a glance what comes from where one. That's it. Any questions?
Councillor Wolf, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the software, did you say?
Microsoft Power BI.
BI,
yeah. Business Information or Business Intelligence. It's a free product, actually, from Microsoft.
does anybody else have any questions at this time? No. Okay. Sorry, I didn't see the red light there.
I just swapped over because the names were on the wrong one.
Thanks for the chair.
Marcus, I was just wondering, access to those graphs and things throughout the year, will you be able to bring us, like, for each council, will that be available to us on the portal? Yeah, it's not planned for us to be able to access that, is it?
There's no portal that actually your technical staff can go in, but we will only give you the sort of high-level information with commercial and the member council raised, and then we will give you your council breakdown.
Okay.
That's what I think we have to share.
Sure
we want to know what Kalamunda's doing, but we'll just focus on...
It's just we'll get throughout the year, it's good for residents. It's a good way of us being able to communicate how they're going.
Yep.
Thank you, Councillor Collins. I thought I saw another question. No? We're all good? All right, thank you, Mr. CEO, for that update. Brings us to agenda item number 9, which is the confirmation of minutes of previous meetings. Did we see if any requests to alter the minutes are circulated? No. In that case, then, could I please have a mover and a seconder for the recommendation to adopt the minutes? So moved, Councillor Wolfe. Seconded, Councillor Boyd. Is there anyone against? There being no one against, I declare that carried unanimously. Agenda item 10, questions by members of which due notice has been given. We received some questions from Councillor Johnson, and I think a response has been included in the red pack in front of you. That relates to the question asked about solar panel waste. Mr. CEO, did you want to give an update on the information provided?
Thank you, through the chair. So there is this graph is in your pack, and which is the anticipated generation of solar panels that will be decommissioned until 2035. But also, on top of that, obviously, the inverters will be enter in the waste stream, and it will start from now on onwards, 2020, and then batteries, because that's going to be common, and they're going to be... entering the waste stream as well. Batteries will be covered under the National Battery EPR once it's launched. So the federal government is looking at that, but this puts extra pressure on the federal government to actually come up with a plan. And Sustainability Victoria is tasked to look at an extended producer responsibility scheme for batteries. So that would be would include these wall batteries for solar systems. So regarding the volume, so we've got volume. So in 2035, 13,000 tons of decommissioned solar panels will be available in the WA market. The processing is possible by shredding, removing the aluminium, and then either chemical treatment of heat or heat treatment of the glass and the laminated material. It's a very difficult material because it's a layered material. It's a bit like a windscreen of a car. It has glass, plastic. So you need some technology actually to pull it apart. There is no proven technology yet. It's very expensive, but the market has a bit of time to look at it. So I have a lot of information and reference material and links if there's an interest to it, and share that. And we will, as an organization, we'll keep an eagle eye out for opportunities if there's an opportunity for the EMRC to have a look at it and the feasibility study.
Thank you. Does that satisfy your questions for now, Councillor Johnson, or do you have any follow-up questions?
So thanks for that information. I'd love to know where that data came from, so that would be great if you're able to provide that in the graph. I guess my follow-up question is, maybe along the lines of, we'll follow that up at some point. Just wondering how we can, if there's a way of formalising that to review it at a particular time, or how we can build that into the decision making in the future.
Yeah, and I guess that'll be sort of anticipating tonnage availability as panels reach the end of their useful life. Indeed, that might be something that councils or councillors might wish to raise during the strategic review as well when we're looking at the scope of the operations going forward. At item 10.2, we've also received questions on notice from Councillor Wolfe, and in your pack there is responses there to the six questions. Questions related to FOGO tonnages received. I also, in addition to the answers provided here from staff, just draw councillors' attention to page, where are we, 28 of 92, for those playing along on diligent boards in the information bulletin. There's a table there which looks at the waste received from the town of Bassendean. So I think there was a, from the 4th of the 8th, FOGO tonnages start to be received, but in the week ending the 31st of August, there's 49 units. What are those units? That's tonnes? Yeah. So 49 tonnes of general waste received and 60 tonnes of FOGO waste. So we're receiving from the town of Bassendean across all of those 4 weeks of full delivery considerably more tonnes of FOGO than we are receiving of general waste from the town of Bassendean. I think when we did the analysis of the contents of the bins, when we did that survey, the town of Bassendean did have quite a high percentage of organic matter in comparison to some of the other member councils, but I would imagine those figures would replicate. I think it shows that the education program that's been delivered as well by MRC staff has been particularly effective, because the tonnes of FOGO waste received in comparison to general waste exceeded my expectations anyway. So, Councillor Wolfe, did you have any follow-up questions to the answers provided?
Maybe just one. So, as part of this trial that we're conducting, will we be analysing how much is FOGO and how much is GO when it comes in?
Just before I pass over to the CEO, the use of the word trial and the use of the word interim seems to be interchangeable and confused to me. The town of Bassendean is not engaged in a trial. It has permanently moved its waste collection services to a three-bin FOGO setup, so there's no trial there. The facility that we've provided at Red Hill is an interim facility pending the outcomes of any tender processes for a larger facility. So I wouldn't use the word trial, but you're free to do so. Sorry, Mr. CEO.
Through the chair, could you repeat the question? I forgot the question.
So, with the interim / trial,
FOGO and yeah, food and garment.
How much will we be analysing? How much is FOGO and how much is GO?
No, we won't. If we do a specific audit, we can. We actually did that when we did our audit in November. And the outcome was that some 52% was organic in the bin, but 42% was suitable for FOGO processing. And that was broken down into food organics and garden organics. So you need a specific order to do that. And we can play the two videos from the Garden Gurus, and it gives you a good impression how the loads are delivered, and it's just impossible to pull loads apart. But if we want to do another audit, we could on the percentage of FOGO and GO. I just have some tonnages actually for you. In September from Bassendean, we took in 448 tons. 315 tons of that was FOGO material, or was delivered as FOGO material plus contamination, which is 65%. And 170 tons, so 35%, went into the red lid bin material that went into the landfill. The contamination is high, and it has actually increased from the August month. In the August month, we had FOGO material 55%, and we had residual waste at 45%. Now we actually screened yesterday, so the first batches that came in from the August, they've matured. They're not fully matured, but they were mature enough to screen. So we screened material on Tuesday, and we'll have a mass balance and contamination and how much tons went in and how many cubic meters or tons came out through the process. We'll have that information available over the next couple of weeks.
Councillor Wolfe.
Right, so just related to my last question is, so can we have something like a sort of like a quarterly report detailing what you've just sort of said?
Yeah, it will actually be in a monthly report in the new format, so you can easily look at the green bars versus the blue and you know exactly. Shall we play the videos because they tell a good story?
If it's ready to go, yes.
Yes, ready to go.
Yes, we have two videos that we can play that might help councillors get a visual understanding of what's going on in the collection and to see why it would be difficult to pull apart eggshells from blades of grass in the way they're received.
The smell, well, don't get me started on the smell. But fortunately, there's a new way of getting rid of waste. I've come to the town of Bassendean in Perth to chat to Mayor Renee McLennan to learn about their new three-bin system, FOGO. Renee, what is it all about?
So Bassendean's recently introduced FOGO collection. So FOGO is food organics and garden organics. We're one of the early adopters, so one of the first to introduce FOGO into our waste services. So food organics is basically all of your kitchen scraps, so your potato, vegetable and fruit peelings, any leftover meals and spoiled food. Your garden organics is your green waste, so things like branches, leaves, grass clippings, but it also includes other things like soil, cardboard, paper products, pet droppings, even kitty litter. So it's basically all the stinky stuff that you normally put in your general waste bin now goes into your FOGO bin, with the exception of disposable nappies.
So what does this mean in our home?
So we wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to make the transition to the new system. So we've given every household a kitchen caddy and compostable caddy liners. So the idea is that people can have the caddy in their kitchen, and as they're preparing their meals, they can just pop the food scraps in. When the caddy is full, they can take that FOGO material out to their bin in the caddy liner and put it in their big 240-litre bin. The most important thing, though, is that people are aware of which waste goes in which of the three bins. So sorting it correctly at home is really important. We really want to keep plastic bags out of the FOGO materials, so people need to put it into the compostable liners or into paper. We really don't want plastic or glass in particular ending up in the compost that is then on our sorting fields and the places where our children are playing. Before we introduced FOGO, more than half the contents of our general waste bins was organic matter. So that equates to around 200 kilos per person per year. And of course, all that was going straight to landfill. And we know in landfill that that organic matter breaks down and it produces methane, which is a really harmful greenhouse gas. It's about 28 times more potent than carbon dioxide. It also produces acidic material that can contaminate our groundwater. So it has a really negative impact on our environment and ultimately on our people.
How is this processed?
So once the FOGO material is emptied from our household bins, it's taken in trucks up to the regional waste facility where we've got some modern composting technology. So basically a lot of oxygen is added, the material's aerated and it starts to break down and is turned into compost. So it's a really good example of a circular economy where we're taking waste from the home, turning it into something useful and then bringing it back to our community to use on our gardens. So we know our soils here are really depleted from nutrients, so the compost can come back to our community and people can use it on their own gardens, maybe for their veggie beds or as a foundation for their lawn. We can also use it on our parks and our sporting reserves. But there's also an opportunity for farmers, for vineyards and others to use this compost material to help enrich their soils and produce more.
It's ironic that the grey so-called Bassendean sands that exist right throughout the coastal plain of Perth are classified by the United Nations as the least fertile soils on the planet. I congratulate the town of Bassendean on their efforts to turn Fogo into beautiful, life-giving compost to make this soil something you can really grow plants in.
And this was the first episode, and this is all about the collection and what happens in the household. And last Saturday we aired an episode about how is the process and what does the EMRC do and how do we make it ready to be a saleable product. So Chris, if you can...
The Eastern Metropolitan Regional Council takes in commercial, industrial and household wastes from six member councils. Immediately, we can see recycling, repurposing and landfill on a massive scale here in the Eastern Corridor of Perth. The CEO of the council is Marcus Geisler. Marcus, I can see you're very excited about this new evolving means of looking after household waste called Fogo. What's it all about?
Oh, no, it is actually very exciting. So Fogo is all about having a dedicated bin at every household to collect food and garden waste. So basically anything that is organic. So anything that has lived or has grown at some stage. So that means all your waste from the kitchen, your organic waste, so vegetable waste, meat waste, dairy waste. You can also put your grass clippings in, so your garden waste as well.
So how does a new system avoid this material going into landfill?
So the principle is based on separation at the source. So instead of having two bins at the household, there will be three bins. The lime green bin will go to a processing facility like this. And this is based on an aerobic process, which means we're adding air to the process, and then we look after all the fogging material from Bassendean and Sydney. So there's about 1 million households in Perth and Peel, and every household generates about 2 shopping trolleys of waste every week. And one of these shopping trolleys is actually organic. So half of the waste we produce in a household is organic matter. We capture that, we process it here, and we give it back to improve the soil health.
Education is another role of the EMRC. How does that work?
So what the EMRC can do is providing the educational material and the support services to our member councils. Yes, the bins are still rolled out by the member councils, as Bassendean has done. But the backup and the support system and material is provided by the EMRC. So that creates consistency, backup resources, and a success of the program.
So how good will this compost be for the environment?
The compost we produce will be exceeding the Australian standard 4454. So the user can have peace of mind that it has been tested and sampled and analyzed. Now the benefits of compost, I don't have to explain to you, because you know all about it. So we just have to stop putting organic matter in landfill and creating greenhouse gases, and making sure we process the organic matter and turn it into nutrient-rich and structured material for healthy soils moving forward.
This is the final product of this process, and it's a beautiful, rich, black material. A lovely, earthy smell. Now, when it comes to soil improvement, this stuff is gold. And I'm very excited at the prospect of such large quantities of this being sent out to the market and eventually going back into the soil where it's needed.
And we're all very excited too. So those two videos and the answers provided in writing, Councillor Wolf, does that satisfy you at this time, or do you have any follow-up?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. And, of course, in addition to all of the amazing environmental benefits that arise out of diverting organic matter from landfill, the tax avoidance is great. So it's that 60 tonnes worth of...
Landfill tax avoidance.
Yes, that's right. 60 tonnes worth of waste levy that the town of Bassendean did not pay in that week. Which are savings that I'm sure all of the other member councils, ratepayers, would also look forward to enjoying too. Which brings us to agenda item number 11, questions by members without notice. Do we have any questions? Councillor O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just my question is to the CEO about the the current or outstanding audit process. I understand there's something that needs to be resolved before we can resolve our audit. So can I have some clarity on that, please?
Mr. CEO? Thank you, through the Chair. So this is not an issue just for the EMRC. This is actually for every local government in Western Australia. It's all about the asset valuation. The Auditor General recommended that there's a different asset valuation for certain assets. And it's going through a regulation change. So it doesn't have to go to Parliament. It's not a, it doesn't have to change the Act, but the regs have to be changed. And they are in the process of being changed now. It's not material for the EMRC, so our audit results should not change. It's only an impact of $1 million, I think, for... So it's not an issue, but it's an issue for all local governments in Western Australia. So we just have to wait until the regulations go through. Then we will get our audit results signed off, and then we can provide the information, issue the annual report and provide the information to the member councils. We expect this to happen in the next 2 weeks, but we have no control. As EMRC.
Councillor Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of questions regarding the agenda and for items to be added in to the printing when the agenda is printed out for us. Mm-hmm. Is it appropriate I bring it up now or at item 14.3?
As in the words that are on the agenda, or does this relate to the item where we're talking about the change in the format to our meetings, or
no? It was regarding the acknowledgement of country.
Oh yes,
because that's not in the agenda whatsoever, not in my agenda anyway. And I'd like that included so that the public and the community know that we. Do that knowledge.
Okay.
I know you say it every time, but I don't know where it fits in.
True to Chair, if we do it under item one, under the announcement and the declaration of opening, because that's consistent with the standing orders that we last approved in 2013. We are going through the process now with the help of Mr. James McGovern for next year. We will bring that back, and that will be an opportune time for us to reflect that as an acknowledgement and welcome to country at that point.
Okay, and the second part of the question is I'd like it in English and Aboriginal so that we, because I don't speak Aboriginal, so I haven't got a clue what the chairman's saying. I get the last bit, always was, always will be, but I'm not sure if that's what you're saying.
There's no such thing as Aboriginal, as it were, Councillor Powell. I'm speaking in Noongar, Maya.
In Noongar, then?
Yes.
Yes. But I don't understand it. So if it's written in English, then I can give due respect to the written word while you're saying it.
Well, as alluded to by the Chief Financial Officer, the agenda, I believe, is a function of the standing orders that have the effect of a local law, and we can't deviate from what's required in the standing orders.
Initially, the response was in regards to the formal sections, but in terms of the announcements itself, we do reflect that as part of the minutes, but we can take that on notice and see what we can do to assist and support Councillor Powell's request.
But I'm very happy to provide follow-up Noongar language lessons to any councillors who would like to understand further what it is that I'm saying. Do we have any further questions? Councillor Dorr.
Yeah, just in relation to that, because I remember that the council resolution would have been 2 years ago now in February, I think 2018, when we brought in the flags and everything like that and the protocols and the procedures. I'm sure that in that, from memory, we had a section there that we have the proper acknowledgements and welcome to country, didn't we, and part of that motion at that time. So did that make no material difference? Because yes, it isn't mentioned in here in the agenda.
I think that is correct from memory. Staff, are you able to help me on that?
I'll have to double check, but I suppose in response, what Mr. Chairman has already done is actually consistent with that as well. I think in the spirit of the original intent.
Mm. if you would like the acknowledgement written in both Miller and English, I'm happy to do so. I change it around a bit from time to time.
And that was the point I was getting at. You do say a lot, and I don't understand one word of what you're saying, so just out of respect that I can show respect,
yes.
I need to see it in some form that I understand.
Absolutely, yes.
And we do it at Belmont, and it's in all our minutes and agendas, so that we, when you're saying it, we can just look.
Yes.
And it's there. And it also proves to the community that we've got respect. And I know we do, because we're up and looking at the flag. So if that can be organised, I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, I'm happy to work with staff to accommodate that request. Councillor Dorr, did you have a question? No. Councillor Collins.
Just my apologies, because I'm not 100% familiar with when certain questions should be asked. I have some questions on item 4.1. Are they asked now in the questions without notice, or are they asked at the beginning of the item before debate?
Sorry, did you mean 14.1, which is
the 14.1
list? Yeah, there is a further opportunity to ask questions in relation to individual reports later on in the meeting. So I guess this part of the agenda is more just to ask general questions that don't necessarily pertain to agenda items. Councillor O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just seeking clarity on a newspaper article that featured yourself that referenced a FOGO facility that had the ability to capture methane gas. I'm just trying to understand, is that, my understanding is it wasn't an adopted position to have that specified, so can you just clarify?
Yes, can you read the exact wording of the bit that you've got?
I can't, but...
You don't have it available?
Just after some clarity whether the EMRC has changed its position on a specific technology type?
No. From the interview that I had with the journalist, what I did specify was to say that we had an existing licence for an anaerobic facility, up to 150,000 tonnes, if I understand correctly. I explained that the tender process was technology neutral, and that was a process that was ongoing, but the license, the long-standing license that we had in place, was for an anaerobic digestion process, and that under an anaerobic digestion process, for example, it would be possible to capture the methane and produce electricity. Whether that spirit and intent was accurately reported in the newspaper, I cannot say. Any other questions? Councillor Powell.
Sorry, just for clarification,
can I know what newspaper we're talking about, so I can look it up?
Was this the Echo article? Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I believe it's the front page of the last edition of the Echo. Councillor Georgia Johnson.
Thank you. Could I ask a follow-up question to Councillor O'Connor's first question about the audit? If we requested, or do we think we need to request an extension to the audit deadlines?
Councillor Johnson, the changes are being gazetted. In terms of the timelines, we've already met the obligations under the regulations, having submitted the accounts to the auditors before 30th of September. So we've met all those. So from our perspective, we've met all the deadlines. There's no extension required. And we are working very closely with the OAG to ensure we are in a position that we can wrap it up as soon as we can.
Thank you for that. I have a question relating to the GHD presentation about the strategic review. I was just wondering who in the organisation is overseeing that process.
Minister CEO.
The Chair, that would be me.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any other questions? No. That brings us to agenda item 12, announcement of confidential matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There is none. Item 13, business not dealt with from a previous meeting. There is none. Right, item 14. So we've got five reports in front of us with the option to move those on block. So are there any items that councillors wish to remove from on block and have dealt with separately? Councillor O'Connor.
Item 14.3, I'm going to make an amendment to that recommendation.
Certainly. So item 14.3, which is the council meeting and committee structure item. Any other items? Councillor Georgia Johnson.
Thank you. I just have a question on 14.2.
Certainly. Okay. So at this point, Councillor Collins, I'm happy to throw it open to questions on any of those reports, excluding item 14.3, which will be dealt with at a later time. So any questions on reports 14.1, 2, 4 and 5? Councillor Collins.
Through the chair. Firstly, my apologies. I could have probably emailed these through before, but I, being deputising, I sort of my time was a little bit more limited. I noticed in the financial reporting that the new access road at Red Hill for the three lots 8, 9, and 10 had a significant variance. I think it was 66,000. I think it was originally budgeted 50, and there was a variance of 66,000. So I just thought I'd ask about that one. If there was a particular reason it was so much more.
Thank you, Councillor Collins. As I look over to staff members who will volunteer with their eyes to answer that question for me, as they confer with each other.
So that's on page 28, is it?
Sorry, through the chair. I may have actually ended up combining some of my questions, which may be 14.1 and 2, because I'm sorry, I apologise for that. But that was reported in a variance. It may actually be in 14.2, sorry.
Okay, potentially 14.2, the variance relating to the access road.
Access road for lots 8, 9 and 10.
Yeah, it's just a timing thing. The access road construction is still on budget, on target to achieve budget. So it's just the timing of the expenditure.
Okay.
So it's possible that some of the payments were brought forward ahead of schedule. Is that?
No, it'd just be the way that we anticipated the spend on that item compared to when the actual payments have been presented by the contractor.
Okay. All right. Does that satisfy you?
Thank you. Yes, I was just looking at the full year budget was 50,000 for that one, and the year to date actual was 116,000 on page 3 of 5. And that'll be in 14.2. But that may be, as you said, I just saw because it said yearly budget, and then the actual, I just thought I'd ask the question.
We'll just allow staff a moment to find the records. Sorry, did you have a page reference number in front of you?
So it's page, of the overall report, it's page 36. It's the capital expenditure statement. And sorry, it says in the corner, page 3 of 5. So it's page 3 of the capital expenditure statement.
These were very recently acquired as well.
Yes, we need to record it for those playing at home.
Is that it? Just to let council know, when we prepared our budgets, we forecast our costs to the end of the financial year. On some of the projects, they weren't complete, and therefore there is a residue. Now, those funds were not carried forward, but the project is continuing. The funds were approved, but it's funds that are sort of still that apply to that particular project, and I'm in the process of doing a reconciliation and putting it all together for a part of the half-year budget review. So it's funds that were there that were supposed to have been spent as at 30th in June, but as the Chief Projects Officer said, due to timing, things were extended and it didn't happen as at 30th of June, so it's continued over.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so. And I just had two further questions, but I've just realised, as I said, I put them all in together. So these two relate to 14.1, mm-hmm. And they're probably more general questions rather than detailing a particular reference. The first was, I noticed that we hire dust monitoring equipment from a particular company, and one of the items was nearly $5,000. And I just wondered if that's something that we do ongoing, long-term, whether or not that's something, you know, if it's very expensive technical equipment or whether we could actually purchase
is it. With a view to seeing if it's worthwhile investment to own one of these machines rather than hire it. Mr. CEO, who should we field this to?
Through the chair, we do have our own dust monitoring equipment at Hazelmere. We have two fixed monitors. But if we're doing personnel testing, where we put a dose meter on the personnel, then we do hire that equipment.
Okay, right. So this is the equipment that's been hired is for staff.
Correct.
Rather than to pick up atmospherics.
Yes.
Okay.
And do we do that monitoring regularly?
Through style. Yeah, we do it once or twice a year. I'm not sure exactly what the frequency is, but it's of that order. You know, we do check frequently.
Yeah. Thank you. And the third question, or the last question, was just I also noticed, and forgive me, it may just be not having ever asked this before, but we've got a number of items on there for skip bin hire. And being a waste organisation, I just wondered if that was something that we do because of economies of scale of outsourcing that, or whether that's something that has been considered to bring in-house.
Good question, yes. We're in the business of receiving waste. Picking it up, though, is a different matter. Chief Operational Officer?
Yes, through the chair. I actually had a meeting with my staff today for that very question. So the work loads for the requirements for additional bins has escalated quite heavily. So we do rely at the moment on outsourcing a lot of that. So we've got a few companies that are actually giving us a few prices to see what it will cost, because we're actually looking probably for about 12 to 15 additional bins to take up the need for the additional volumes that we think, i.e. bay waste we're running at the moment, we need additional bins. So it's more cost effective for us to use our own bins. But at the moment, to keep the works going, we are relying on that. But we are looking at... once I get the pricing, we'll put a business case forward to get signed off to purchase additional bins for ourselves. So we are busy with that at the moment.
I don't feel so silly now.
No, Councillor Conflins, while you're at this table, you need never apologise for any of the questions you ask. Mr. CEO.
Thank you, through the chair. And I think the Chief Operating Officer highlights a good point there. The bay waste, management of the bay waste transfer station is only a temporary arrangement for now, 6 months. So it is not wise then to buy assets for long term. So we tend to rent, hire the bins, and once it's a longer duration, then we'll just buy the assets.
Okay. Councillor Georgia Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question relating to item 14.2 as well. On page 41, we've got an item on a fossil fuel divestment. I noticed that has been tracking at around 15% in recent, earlier in the year, and 12% last year. Now it's down to 3.8%. I'm wondering what factors have influenced that.
I suspect it's the maturation of bonds, but the Chief Financial Officer, can you enlighten us, please?
Consistent with the investment policy that Council has adopted, we look at the best rate on the day, and we do give preference to non-fossil fuel. But unfortunately, of late, non-fossil fuel, because of the world economy, a lot of those deposit-taking institutions hasn't offered very good rates. So we as per consistent with the policies to maximise our return on the day itself.
Thank you.
Councillor Powell, did you have a question earlier? No?
No, I had a query. And
it's all covered. Okay, so if we don't have any more questions, then we've got item 14.3 proposed to be removed from en bloc. Do I then have a mover and a seconder that we adopt the recommendations in reports 14.1, 14.2, 14.4 and 14.5? So moved, Councillor Boyd. Seconded, Councillor Hamilton. Do we have anybody against? There being no one against, I declare that carried unanimously. Which then brings us to consideration of item 14.3, Council meeting and committee structure. Councillor O'Connor, I understand you wish to move an amendment.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to move it, but I'd like to add this amendment, and I'll just read it out. I think I didn't get a chance to talk to you, but I gave you a copy of the draft wording. I've modified a little bit now that I've reread it. It's an additional point six, and it reads, request the CEO continue to provide confidential reports and attachments as part of the public agenda forum process to the chief executive officers and technical officers to allow them to advise their EMRC councillors. And it has the effect that this change that we're doing tonight, that we're potentially going to do tonight, won't stop EMRC councillors from talking to their member tech officers and CEOs on confidential attachments.
Thank you, Councillor O'Connor. So I take it then that you are moving the recommendation with the addition of the 0.6 as you've read it out. Do we have a seconder for the amended recommendation? That's seconded by Councillor Wolfe. Is there anyone who would like to speak against that? Question, Councillor Johnson.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. What would be the impact of that? Can I have some additional commentary?
Thank you, Councillor Johnson. I spoke to the CEO prior to the meeting, and he agreed that that was always going to happen, and that CEO, member CEOs and tech officers would still be able to receive the confidential attachments or have access to them. But I just, for my own comfort, I'd like to have it as part of the recommendation. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just wondering, can you read it out again or can I get it in writing? Sorry.
So a new point six that reads, request the CEO continue to provide confidential reports and attachments as part of the public agenda forum process to the chief executive officers and technical officers to allow them to advise their EMRC councillors.
Does that include our deputies as well? Are they still receiving that information?
They will still receive as normal, I understand.
Sorry, just a question, if I might, Councillor O'Connor. You propose that confidential reports and attachments be sent to both the CEO and technical officers. Some of the items that we deal with as confidential items, though, are not of a technical nature. Do you intend that all confidential items be referred to the technical officers or just those that are relevant to the roles they're performing?
My preference would be that all, because tech officers are already approved under confidentiality agreements, so I don't think we need to blur the lines by differentiating between one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I guess, just as a follow-up question, if I might, if the item is being referred to the CEO, would it not then be open to the CEO to refer that on to any staff that they might deem relevant to receive advice from?
Thank you for your question. That could definitely take place. This additional amendment was not meant to be onerous and not meant to create problems down the track when someone determines that that's more of a technical nature and someone determines it's not. So it's not meant to be referred to. Requesting comment is just to provide it to them, not requesting any follow-up from the CEOs or the tech officers.
Okay. All right. So having received those questions then, do you wish to make any further amendments to your amendment or you propose to move that as read?
No, I'll leave it as read, given that the CEO agreed that, and happy for the CEO to confirm, agreed that this was going to happen anyway.
Okay. All right, so that's been moved, Councillor O'Connor. It's been seconded, Councillor Wolfe. Is there anyone who wishes to speak against? There being no one who wishes to speak against, I will then put that to a vote. All those in favour? Those against? I declare that carried unanimously. Which brings us to the end of the agenda item 14 items. We move now to agenda item 15, which is reports of committees. We've got one committee report in front of us, which is the Waste Advisory Committee meeting held on the 8th of October. The minutes have been circulated. I take it councillors have had a chance to familiarise themselves with the recommendations. Are there any questions at this stage from councillors on the Waste Advisory Committee minutes? Councillor Johnson.
Oops, sorry, thank you. I have a question on 11.3. I'm just wondering if we can, is it possible to get an update on that item about the FOGO agreement?
Okay, so item 11.3 relates to the draft FOGO supply agreement. Mr. CEO, are you able to provide us with an update on where that's at?
Thank you, through the chair. So the officers are support the deferral motion because it actually doesn't interfere with the intended timeline to go for tender. So I just refer back to the September meeting, and that had a couple of items that the council endorses the feasibility study, which it did. It approves the preparation of the tender document. And point three is the council requests its member councils to confirm the commitment to supply the FOGO waste at an indicative cost, and that's going through the motion through all member councils. Actually, I think Mundaring already had it passed to the council. So that's all on track. The only with this change, what happens is the document will be available for member councils to get legal advice, and that legal advice should be back in the next 3 weeks, so we can take the FOGO agreement to the December meeting, which is the next meeting. EMC Council meeting. Actually, we have tomorrow, we have a page turn with all the technical officers, and we're going page by page with includes all the comments from the Member Council technical officers, and we're going to agree on the final draft.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any other questions for items from the WAC committee? No? Okay, so we can deal with the items from the WAC committee on block, unless anyone wishes to withdraw. No? Okay, then can I please have a mover and a seconder to accept the WAC recommendations before us on block? So moved, Councillor Hamilton, seconded Councillor Powell. Is there anyone who wishes to speak against? There being no one wishing to speak against, I'll put that motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Okay, which takes us to agenda item 16, reports from delegates. I'm
not aware of any. Item 17, members' motions of which previous notice has been given, nil. Item 18, business of an urgent nature, nil. Item 19, confidential matters for which the meeting may be closed, nil. And agenda item 20, future meetings of council. So the next meeting of council will be Thursday the 3rd of December at 6 p.m. Make sure that's in your diaries. And after that, I think we have a January recess. Right. And for the December meeting, will we be having a meal afterwards?
I'm sure we can organise that, okay. Chairman.
All right. As we traditionally do. Okay. That brings us then to the close of the meeting. I declare the meeting closed at 7:15 p.m.